This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Those of you who can follow in the Hebrew, I've got a Ramban Xeroxed, because it's going to be a little... it'll definitely be an advantage to follow inside.
Now, I have a question.
Mm.
In the last few weeks, we never heard anything about Leah's reaction to what happened with Venus. But we knew that she was kind of a forward person and she didn't seem hesitant to speak her mind. Do we know anything about
how she reacted
to any of this?
No. And what does that mean? Why don't we know it? It can only mean that there was nothing in her reaction that would give us instruction for today. The Torah doesn't only includes those things that are important for us in terms of instruction today. It's not a historic record and it's not a psychological document. So she must have reacted, and who knows how she reacted. Now, what we're dealing with today is something that we started with last week, and that is the difference in opinion between the Rambam and the Ramban as to why, not just why they reacted that way, but what the argument was between Yaakov and his sons. Yaakov and his sons together confront Shechem and his father, and together they say, "We want you to have a bris." So together they must have had in mind something, some kind of subterfuge. And Shimon and Levi go into the town and wipe the town out, and Yaakov is furious with them. So what exactly was Shimon and Levi's view? Why did they believe that they were entitled to do that? And why did Yaakov get angry with them? Why did he believe that they were not entitled to do that? And the Rambam, you'll remember, learnt last time Mipnei ze nitchayvu kol ba'alei Shechem hariga, and that's why all the people of Shechem were guilty of death. Sha'arei Shechem gazal v'hem ro'u v'yodu v'lo yidanuhu. For Shechem stole, and they saw and knew and did not judge him. And we'll analyze, in order to analyze that Rambam more deeply, we need to see the Ramban's objections to him. But the one point we made already last week was that the crime was not adultery. Dina was not married. The crime was theft. That was a very innovative angle that the Rambam brought in, that the crime of Shechem was theft, and for that he was guilty. And their crime was for not judging the theft. That's the Rambam's view.
You have frequently said that theft, in terms of Jewish law, includes things like stealing time, or these other little technicalities. But in the Noahide laws, is that also the theft includes
those things? Yes. He says that almost explicitly. Even a worker who eats lunch when he shouldn't eat lunchtime, so he takes too much of a lunch break off, is a capital offence for a non-Jew.
Yeah. He's accepting payment for that time.
Right.
He wasn't getting paid.
Oh, you mean kind of theft of time where you steal some, where you just deprive somebody else of their of their time. That I'm not sure how far we would go. According to the Rambam, we probably would, because he puts this into the category of theft. He said, when he defines the prohibition of theft, he says whether he stole money or people, whether even not paying a worker on time, or a worker who ate some of the owner's food that he wasn't entitled to. even if it's less than the value of a pruta. So even if it has no monetary value, there would still be an obligation. So my sense is yes, that would be as fine as that when it comes to theft, although the Rambam doesn't say it. And the fact that he goes here into the fact that the stealing of dinar he regards as an act of theft as well. And that it's even less than a pruta, whereas in our law theft would have to be worth at least a pruta. A pruta is about a cent.
It's the stealing, they go into what they mean by the stealing of dinar?
You weren't here last week, were you?
No.
Yeah,
oh,
that's when we did it. We did that quite thoroughly. Sharon, I want to actually try and organize that we distribute the tapes. As we're going through, I'm just finding that it's so important. So I spoke to Elisa about how we could have them copied. Do you have the whole set of them?
I should have.
Put them together somewhere. We'll have to give them titles and things like that. But I think it's important to the men this morning as well. And it's just. I sort of assume that when I've taught something, I kind of assume that the community knows it, and then now I've got to start stopping myself and saying, hey, but the ladies know this, but the men are clueless. And that's not good, so we've got to find ways of bridging that. Maybe distributing the tapes will help.
Could the women also hear the Kuzar issue?
Absolutely. The women are invited, because we had one woman that came to the Kuzar issue. It's a difficult time for women, but it's not a men's own issue. Yeah. Not consistently, Mr. Lippman is there. It's tapes them, and mostly they're taped. And again, I'm not sure what Alan does with them, but it hasn't been all the time. Sometimes he doesn't. We haven't made. I suppose we should just have a system of recording all shiurim and finish.
My husband was telling me this morning I didn't have the right definition of snigul.
Really? Good.
We're all in trouble.
There is no definition. It changes every time.
Well, you can imagine.
By now, if we don't know that point, nothing very big.
Can you believe one of the men said this morning it understood snoot as being the requirement to make women unattractive? So he got into a bit of trouble this morning.
He told me it was good.
Well, he is alone, he's not married.
That makes sense.
That doesn't speak well for our women, does it?
It just shows how much distorted idea there is. You had a quick question. Sorry, Linda.
If Mitterstam were guilty for not having a legal system that would punish Stam for the section,
That's true, except that what there used to be in society was a form of social intolerance for it. It's certainly a suggestion like this of taking a girl out of one family environment into another cross-cultural and all of that kind of thing. Not two people who are going out voluntarily and so on, but this type of thing, I think there was a time when where socially it wasn't very acceptable and there was social censure for it. But I'm not sure, and you're right in a sense. There will be claims on the secular world and the non-Jewish world. Not the fact that they have a legal system isn't enough. Is the legal system enforcing the principles of the Noahide laws? And what are those principles?
But didn't he take?
Did he finish Linda first?
Well, it just seems this is supposed to be very real world, and that principle sounds very much out there. Very theoretical, very
long. Well, in the Gemara issue we learnt on Monday night that God doesn't regard the non-Jewish world as having kept the seven Noahide laws. And it's so hopeless that he almost released them of the obligation. Mm-hmm. Almost released them because he saw that it was just even just these seven Noahide laws. And yet we, as the Jewish people, are meant to enforce it in the areas that we have control over. That non-Jewish people who live under our authority are obligated to keep the seven Noahide laws. But yes, you're right that non-Jewish society.
Take the Rambam's position that logical conclusion, then Jews should have been massacring all kinds of people throughout history.
Okay, correct. Where they have a basis to do that, where they have the power to do that, yes. Again, in the Muslim world, for example, there is capital punishment for seduction, and that's one has to realize that we're talking about the world. The Muslim world is becoming an increasingly large proportion of the world, and I think in certain parts of the Far East as well, it isn't tolerated. Certainly, a virgin. This is not tolerated at all. There's severe social, if not legal, censure. There are parts. It's this crazy world in which we live here, where as long as there's no violence, no physical violence, it's assumed that anything's okay. As long as you don't force somebody physically to do anything, then if you can pry somebody's money away from him in a way that you haven't physically abused him, that's okay in our society. But it's not okay in a Torah society. So yes, with all our sense of that we're living in a very civilized society, in some ways we are, it's way off being what the Torah requires as a minimum requirement of civilization. And that's the fascinating area, that you're right, that where we are is so far from what the Torah would require as minimum civilization.
But it's not only where we are, it's throughout history.
No, the Muslim world was more normal in history. It's throughout Western history, which is relatively recent. And even there, in the little villages and little towns, if a family was upset, if a girl had been taken advantage of, my goodness, there was censure.
Shotgun wedding.
There was what?
Shotgun wedding.
Yeah, there was some worse than that too. And there was sometimes revenge, this kind of thing. The brothers would get involved, and the society, although there might not have been a legal system, the society didn't allow it. It was considered abusive and debasive.
But
as a legal system, no, you're right that it didn't exist in the Muslim world.
Did Shechem grab her and take her in and then seduce her, or did she walk right in?
We learned this last week, but basically they were playing music, she went and danced with them a little bit, and then they invited her home, and little by little, it was a traditional seduction, which the Torah calls a rape.
So at no point did he like pick her up and pop her in somewhere?
Doesn't seem to be so, no. He seduced her mind. He raped her mind. Right, now I want to work through this Ramban with you inside, because you'll see the Ramban's thinking, and seeing the Ramban's thinking will clarify the Ramban. Sorry, Kelsey, you want to?
I don't understand why they thought they had the right to go kill everybody rather than try to set up a legal system to bring them to justice. Why were they the judge, the jury, the
The way that we judge the non-Jewish world for not keeping the Noahide laws is quite dramatic. It's quick, it's one witness, it's all the normal laws of evidence don't apply. Because the Noahide laws are considered to be so basic to civilization, you don't get a chance to be tried for being uncivilized. You get a chance to be tried for being a civilized person who broke a law. But for being uncivilized, there's no trial. That's the principle. Of course, this only applies when the Jewish people are civilized. You can't have Jewish barbarians going and killing non-Jews because they're not civilized. We're talking, this can only be done where the Jewish world is held to be the absolute epitome of morality and civilization, that they're allowed to even do this. And in the time of Yaakov, when the Jewish people was one family, and that family was as noble as they were, that was so, and they had that authority and that responsibility. Well, the bigger question is, why did the father not approve then? That's the big issue. There was a difference of opinion that was never resolved. That means that there's a difference in outlook between Yaakov and that's really what I'm trying to get to, is what was the difference in outlook between Yaakov and his sons? Now, the piece of Rambam that we're doing is in the right-hand column of the Ramban, so it's the left-hand side of the page, the right-hand column of the left-hand side of the page, and in the middle of that column you'll see the Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is the verse that we're looking at, and it's a long piece of Ramban. I'm going to read through it all. Part of it I'm going to read quite fast, and that we'll go more slowly in the parts that are, and I'll keep on showing you where the place is so that you're able to follow. So in the thick letters he quotes the verse from the Torah, Vayanu b'nei Yaakov et Shechem v'et Chamor aviyah b'mirma, and the sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and Chamor his father with slyness, or as we learned last week, with wisdom. And that's the verse from the Torah, and here starts the words of the Ramban. Hinei chamoru shchem El Avia Velachia Dibru, Chamor and Shechem spoke to both the father and her brothers. Aval Hazaken Loyana Otam Davar, the old man did not answer. Ki Bonov Yedabru Bimkoim Ubinyan Hazeh, the son spoke, he kept quiet. So when Shechem came and said, what do you want me to do? The son said, we want you to have a bris. Yaakov did not say anything. Why did they speak? Lichvodoy, that shows him honor. So that the basic negotiations are at a lower level, and the father sits there, listens, observes, and comes in only at the end when there's a need to add something that's a form of honor. Ki ba'avur hiyos hadova lohim lekaloin lo yirtzu shiyiftach piv ledaber bo'klal. Since they're going to have to do something embarrassing, disgraceful, they didn't want Yaakov to be in any way tainted by it. Which is an interesting thing, that there's some things that we have to do that are right to do, but they're still embarrassing. Can you think of any other examples of that? They're from the Torah. When Yaakov told the lie to Yitzchak, when Yitzchak said, who are you? And he said, I'm Esav, your son. And Rashi points out that what he was really saying is, I am your son, Esav is your bechor. Remember that? So that he phrased it in such a way that it wasn't 100% of a lie. And everybody knows, but at the end of the day, you were misleading your father if it was a lie. Yeah. But the fact that you phrase it in a way that isn't a lie shows that you retain consciousness of the gap, of the fact that you're not 100% straight. And that is, embarrassment is a very important key to morality in the Torah. We don't try and eliminate embarrassment, we try and preserve embarrassment. If you have to do something wrong, do it with embarrassment. There's a whole piece of Gemara that tells you how to sin. If you're going to sin already, it assumes now you've gone through it all and you're going to sin. There's a whole process as to how to do it to preserve embarrassment, so that you don't go through the end of it and come out not embarrassed, because then you're dead, then you're finished. But you go through the whole thing and there's still that your dignity isn't at least intact, because you're conscious of the fact that what you're doing is not what should be done, and therefore there's a degree of embarrassment. The Yesh Kan Sheila. And by the way, that's one of the biggest, you know, America is such an interesting place to me, and it's becoming more and more and more interesting. One of the interests is the enormous gap between the things it does as a civilization that are so good and so moral and so elevated compared to other nations, and things that it does that are so bad. I can't think of a nation where the disparity between the good and the bad is so wide and nobody knows it.
What
you know what I mean? If you have great people and murderers, everybody knows this is a nation of great people and murderers, but here you've got such greatness and such bad things all in one, and nobody can tell the difference. It's all good, everything's fine, everything's good. Mm-hmm. And one has to somehow separate it and see. A lot of the good things are the freedom and all that kind of thing. One of the bad things is there's no embarrassment here. Since anything's allowed, there's no need to be embarrassed about anything. And that drops the bottom out of civilization. Once you lose social awareness, once you lose the ability to be embarrassed, there is nothing. I've said recently that America does not stop anybody from climbing to the greatest heights. There's no class system, there's nothing to stop anybody from reaching the top of any field he chooses. But there is nothing to stop anybody dropping to the lowest level of any society in the world. And that's as unique about America as the growth thing is. Just, it is as unusual to find a nation that doesn't stop one dropping, as it is to find a nation that doesn't stop one rising. This is a nation where in the society there's nothing that stops you dropping. You've got to do it yourself, and that's hard, and very, very troubling. It's a problem with the kids and schools and education and adults and society and Jewish community and everything, where there's a line. And one of the mechanisms a society uses to stop a bottomless drop is embarrassment. This is not socially acceptable. You want to do it, at least feel embarrassed about it. But here that doesn't apply, and they didn't want Yaakov to be involved. They didn't say, well, if it's allowed, then what's the, you know, call a spade a spade, what's the problem? No, it is allowed, and yet you shouldn't dirty your hands with it. Let us do the dirty work. But Yesh Kan Sheila, and the Ramban says, but there's a question here, there's a problem. Shehadava nire ki berotzen avia uv'atzasoy onu. Okay, fifth line. The thing appears to have been done with the permission, with the willingness of her father, and with his advice. Ki lefonov hayu, they were in front of him. V'hu hayodea ma'ane ki b'mirma yedaber. And let's face it, says the Ramban, he knew the sly intent, and he allowed it. V'im kein, and if so, lama ka'as. That he didn't participate, we understand. It's not dignified for him to participate. But why did he get angry? As if something happened that he didn't anticipate, that he didn't expect, that he didn't think. You were part of it. So that you don't involve yourself in it, we understand. But we do not understand why you got angry. Va'od, and furthermore, shelo yitachen shiyeh ritzono lahasi bito leknani asher tumei oso. It's not possible that he was planning to marry her off. When the son said, have a bris and then we'll marry, then you can marry her. It's not possible that Yaakov was sitting there and thinking, that's not a bad idea, nice son-in-law. It's not possible. They all worked it out together. So clearly this was all discussed before. What's lovely about this not just this Ramban, but all the Rambans, is just look what he's doing. He's challenging the Torah, challenging the Chumash. He's challenging Yaakov. He's challenging Yaakov's anger. And this, kids learn in school. I think this is amazing that you're teaching religion and you're teaching them how to take the Torah and say, but there's something wrong. Where do you see that kind of education? That the Torah, the greatest force of authority, is questioned. And it's allowed to be questioned if it's done in the right way. The Shimon, the Levi, Levadam, Asu Hamase. And Shimon and Levi were the only ones who implemented it. And their father only got angry with them. Firstly, the father was involved himself. Secondly, all the sons plotted and put the plot together. So Shimon and Levi were the one who implemented it. Why does he get angry with them? Hatashuva, the answer. Ki hamirmo hoiso, that the answer is just next to that little 92, that little footnote number 92. Hatashuva ki hamirmo hoiso ba'omrom lehimolohim kol zocho. The slyness. And the Ramban learns that the slyness, not wisdom, the way Unculus learned it last week. The slyness is in them telling them to circumcise every male. Firstly, they thought the city wouldn't agree. The imu, and that would give them an opportunity to take dinner and go. The imu la yishvu l'nesiyon, and if they do listen to their prince, the yukulam nimulim, and they will all have a bris. Then they would come on the third day when the whole town was in pain and suffering. They would kidnap dinner from Shechem's house. And that was the decision, and that was their father participated in that. That was the plan. That's all Yaakov knew about, that's all the brothers agreed on. And Shimon and Levi wanted revenge. And they killed the whole city. And he's angry about the revenge. And the plan, go and get her out, that's fine. And part of the anger is that they killed the people of the city who did not sin. They were guiltless. Taking a different line to the Rambam. And if they had to kill anybody, it should have been Shechem. And not the city. And this is what the Torah says, and again in the thick print is the quote from the Chumash itself, from the Torah. And the sons of Yaakov spoke to Shechem and Chamor, their father, in deceit, and talked about how he had defiled Dino, their sister. They all agreed to talk in deceit. Because of this terrible thing that was done. So they all decided this was the best way to approach it, but the intention was not to kill the city, the intention was to get Dinah back and maybe to kill Shechem. But that's as far as they planned to go.
They all decided to talk deceitfully.
They all decided to talk deceitfully.
So they all decided to talk deceitfully. Correct. What was the deceit then? If the deceit
was to tell him that if he has a bris, he can marry her. That wasn't true. They had no intention of letting her marry him. That was deceitful.
They didn't have a plan about what would happen if they didn't expect them to agree. They didn't think about what would happen if they did.
No, they decided they would go and kidnap her. They would kidnap her and possibly kill Shechem. But there was no discussion about killing the town. And the Ramban hold that was wrong. They were innocent, and that's what Yaakov was angry about. So let's just go further. The Rabbim Yishalu. The last line of the first column and on to the next column. The Rabbi Mishael and many people now ask the following question. How come the children of Yaakov, such great people, murdered innocent people? If that's what occurred, then Yaakov is right. They murdered. Why weren't Shimon and Levi tried then for murder? How did we allow that to happen? And the Rav answers in Sefer Shoftim when he talks about the Rav. As much as he attacks him, he talks about the Rav, that's the Rambam. When he talks, he was at, lived at the same time, just a little earlier, so he was a contemporary, and they argue like anything, the Rambam, but he refers to the Rambam as the Rav. Answered in the book of Shoftim, and that's what we learned last week, by Amar, and he said, Shebnei Noach Metzuvim al Adinim, Bnei Noach are instructed to keep, preserve the laws, beginning of the third line, that means to provide judges in every city, ladun b'sheish mitzvah shelohem, to judge the six mitzvahs that they have. Why does he say to judge the six and not the seven?
Believe in God, you have to judge.
You have to judge that too, because the seventh is to make judges.
Oh.
You make the seventh is to make judges to judge the other six. Uben Noach shavar alachas mehem, and a ben Noach, a descendant of Noach, any human being who disobeys one of those sins, who ne'erag b'sayif, is killed with a sword. Leave out the parenthesis. Umifnei ze nitchayvu kol ba'al eshchem harigo sha'ar eshchem gazal v'hem ra'u v'yodu v'loy danu. And that's why they were all guilty of death, because Shechem stole, and they saw and heard and did not act, did not judge him. Unquote. That's the Rambam. So he's now used the Rambam to say, he says, well, according to the Rambam, we now understand why Shimon and Levi killed them. Shimon and Levi believed that the whole town was guilty. But says the Ramban himself, V'ein dvorim halalu nechonim be'enayin. In my opinion, that is incorrect. And again, look at the educational system. He calls him the Rav, the Rambam, but yet he feels free to say, that's what he says, and I disagree. And here are my reasons. She'im kein haya Yaakov avinu chayav liyos kodim v'zoyche b'misosom. He asks a very powerful question. He says, in that case, it was a mitzvah to kill them. According to the Rambam, it was a mitzvah to kill them. Is that right? They didn't judge Shem and Chamor, so they disobeyed the seven Noahide laws. We have an obligation to kill people who disobey the seven Noahide laws. If it's a mitzvah to kill...
Their obligation to kill their own.
No. We have an obligation to kill, as the Shimon and Levi did, in fact. If it's an obligation and a mitzvah, who should have been the first one to step forward?
Yaakov.
Why is Yaakov acting all coy for such a mitzvah? The impachad mehem. And okay, maybe he was scared. Maybe he just thought he wouldn't get away with it. Lama ka'as habanav? Why did he curse them? V'ora'afom. Achar kam azmanim v'anashotam v'chilkam v'hefitzam. Even later on, in years to come, he carries on with it. He never gets over this, Yaakov. He never forgives them for this. V'alohim zochu v'osu mitzvah. According to the Rambam, they did a mitzvah. V'vodchu v'elukim v'hitzilam. And they had enough faith in God to go ahead and do it. You, Yaakov, should be ashamed of yourself, that you didn't have enough faith in God to go out and do what has to be done. But your sons did, and you should be proud of them, according to the Rambam. Okay, so we've got the Rambam's view, the Rambam's question. The big issue in the Chumash is, why did they kill innocent people? First question was, why was Yaakov, if he was part of the deceit, why did he get angry? The answer is, he was part of the deceit, getting Dinah out and killing Shechem. But they went further and killed the whole city. That's what he got angry with. If he was so angry, why did they do it? Answers the Rambam, because they didn't judge Shechem. Asks the Ramban, but in that case, it was a mitzvah to kill them all, and why does Yaakov get angry at them? Valdati, according to my opinion, this was now the end of about the 12th line or somewhere around then, we're coming up to the little footnote number 8, two lines before the number 98. Valdati, hadinim shemonu livnei noach b'sheva mitzvah shelohem. The laws given to Bnei Noach, when God says to the Bnei Noach that you must have judges, Einam lohoshiv dayonim b'chol plach u'plach bilvad. It's not just make judges. That's not what the law is. Havol tzivo oisom bedinoi gneva v'oino v'oishek uschaschiv. He commanded them about the laws of theft and oppression and oppressing workmen and paying workers, v'dinei hashomrim, and laws of entrustment, v'oinesu mefateh, and laws of seduction and rape, the obvious nezikin, and laws of damages, the chayvah b'chavera, and laws of violence, the dinei mal v'evaloven, laws of borrowing and lending, the dinei mekach u'memka, laws of buying and selling, u'chayetze bohem. It's interesting, when I started in the work that I'm doing at the moment, I was criticized by a lot of the religious world as making Torah available to the non-Jews. And this Ramban is my basis. What is the Ramban saying? The part of the Noahide laws are the details of Jewish business ethics. It's not just the principle, and then it's the details, all these laws that we've got in our Gemara, all of that they need to have access to. That's not for the Jews alone. Our religious laws are for us alone. So we shouldn't be going teaching the non-Jews about sacrifices and Shabbos and Yom Tov and all of that. That's not for them. That's our intimate family laws. But the laws of commercial interaction, that's universal, and there's every detail of it applies to the whole world. There's nothing about it other than the laws of interest, which apply among Jewish people. But apart from the laws of interest, all the other laws to do with commercial transactions are universal, and the non-Jewish world needs to know them and practice them, and that's their mitzvah. Kinyan adinim shenitzvah b'Yisrael, exactly as the Jewish world is. So they've got to learn Gemara, they've got to learn Bava Kamma, Bava Metzia, and Bava Basra, and they've got to learn the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch on that. All of that non-Jews can and should be learning. The ne'er agaleihem, and if they don't observe those laws, that's a capital offense. It's more important for them to know than for a Jew to know. If a Jew doesn't observe those laws, he has a financial penalty. If a non-Jew doesn't observe those laws, it's capital. In Gona, Vashak, Onos, or Bito Shechaver, if he did any of those things, or Shidlik Adish, or Vachovel, Boki, Yitzhaber, any damage he causes, there's capital punishment for that. Umichlala mitzvah azo, she yeshiva dayonim b'chol, gam b'chol ir v'ir ki Yisrael, and included in that is they must have courts of law, clearly. V'im lo yasu kein eina ne'erogim, but if they don't have courts of law, they don't get killed. Shizu mitzvahs asei bahem, because that's a positive mitzvah. The Ramban finds a technical problem with the Rambam. When we say a non-Jew is punished with death for transgressing the seven Noahide laws, that's for doing what he's told not to do, not for abstaining to do what he ought to do. For abstention, there isn't death. There's only death for an action that is against the Noahide laws. Not judging is abstention. It's not an action. So you might say, but that's the only Noahide law. The Noahide law is make courts of law. Says Ramban, no, that's not the meaning. The meaning is make laws and teach all the laws of the Torah as far as commercial transactions. And if you transgress those laws, then there is death. But creating a system of justice and courts of law, that's an instruction. You have to do that. But there's no death if you don't do that. That there wouldn't be death. And he goes on to bring proofs from the Gemara for that. He goes on to say a few lines down, you can see a little one, a footnote two, and then a line below that in the middle of the line. Bedina Yisroel, according to the rules of the Jewish people, kol din sha'ata yodea sha'ata shalei mimenu, i'ata rashai livroach mimenu. If you're judging a non-Jewish case, and you know that you can judge it and you'll be okay, you won't, that it'll be accepted by the non-Jewish world, then you have to address it. But you can withdraw from a case that you cannot do. In other words, that comes to what Linda was saying earlier, so then we should be running around killing all the non-Jews who don't stop seduction. The answer is we could, if we were on the right moral level firstly, and the non-Jewish world would allow us to do that, then that would be our role. But if we are not permitted to do that and that would endanger us, we're permitted to withdraw from that and say we cannot get involved. It's not an area that we're permitted to get involved. But the Gemara says a non-Jewish person is entitled to refuse to get involved in judging another non-Jew even if he's not at risk. Okay, a non-Jew is entitled to say, it's not my business. I'm not getting involved. He can make that choice. We cannot. If we know that we're safe, we have to get involved. If we're not safe, we can choose not to get involved. But the non-Jew has that choice.
The non-Jew has the choice.
A non-Jew can choose whether or not to get involved in somebody else's immorality. A Jew has to get involved if he's safe, if he'll be protected by that society. Therefore, nirei mikan, it appears from here, shirashai hagoy lomar lebalei hadin, that a non-Jewish judge can say to litigants, eini nizkak lachem, I don't want to get involved in this case. I'm sorry, I'm not judging you. He can do that. Ki tosefes hi beYisrael, because there is a particular Jewish law, this is part of our Torah and not a Noahide law, that says, lo toguru mipnei ish. Did you know that was a law of the Torah? Thou shalt be fearless in front of other human beings. Never withhold the truth because you're afraid. That's a Torah law, and one transgresses the Torah law if one plays politics. So somebody said to me, in shul today, that after the shul, that he had a great rabbi, speaking at the Kotel some years ago, saying that nowadays we should encourage Jews to drive to your house on Shabbos. 50 years ago, you didn't do that kind of thing. If a person wasn't keeping Shabbos, you didn't invite him for Shabbos. But nowadays, the people don't know, and so on. Jews should, not only may you invite somebody to your house for Shabbos, but you should invite somebody to your house for Shabbos, even though he's going to drive. And this person then said, but don't ever quote me on this. That saying, don't ever quote me on this, is a transgression of the Torah law. The fact that he said it was pretty brave. But the fact that there is fear. Loitzaguru mipneish, to withhold the truth because you're afraid of social pressure and all of that kind of thing, that's a transgression of the Torah law. But that is a law to the Jewish people, that's not a Noahide law. And non-Jew is permitted to say, I'm afraid of social pressure, I'm afraid of consequence, I'm not going to get involved in this. But a Jew cannot say that. Therefore, don't withhold any word because of another human being. And certainly, you're not going to judge the non-Jew for not judging his prince. Mm-hmm. If a non-Jew is entitled to it, isn't this beautiful reasoning the Ramban as he goes through this whole demolishing of the Ramban? Certainly you can't hold him responsible for being afraid to judge his prince. If a non-Jew is allowed to say, in any case he can say, I don't want to get involved in this case. It's just, there's too much politics, it's dangerous for me, I don't know what will happen to me, I don't want to get involved. A non-Jew can say that. He's certainly entitled to say, if the prince has seduced the daughter of Yaakov, I'm not getting involved. Why would we kill him for that? And why did the Rambam try and make them obligated, guilty of something they're not guilty? He says that in any case, you don't have to look for guilt among the people of Shechem and all of those seven nations who lived in Palestine at that time. Were they not all idol worshippers? Umagale Arias, were they not all involved in all sorts of terrible sexual acts? Voisim kol tzavos Hashem hayu, and didn't they do all sorts of disgusting things? Because of tzovach alehem bekama mekomes, the Torah writes so many times, wipe them out and destroy them because they're bad and they're evil and they're degenerate. You don't have to kind of figure out what did they do wrong. So the Ramban goes on to conclude that the reason they were wiped out is because they were idol worshippers. There just had to be an action that set it all off. In other words, their guilt was not related to what happened to Shechem. So let's go through the process. Shimon and Levi say, unless we act dramatically, this will happen again. We've got to make it clear that this never happens. The way to make it clear that it never happens is to go out and wipe out the whole city. But what legal basis have we got to wipe out the whole city? They're idol worshippers and they're degenerate people. They're doing all sorts of things that are against the Noahide laws. But not this. You don't have to relate their action to this. In any event, they're guilty of death. Just that normally we won't get involved, but in this case we will get involved and they'll get wiped out. So at the end of the story we have the Ramban who says the only one who was guilty of in this event was Shechem. From that point of view, the only one to have been killed was Shechem. The reason they wiped out everybody else is to make a point. Their legal justification was, you're idol worshippers and you're guilty of death in any case. Why was Yaakov angry? So explains the Ramban. Maybe their decision to have a bris was an honest conversion. Maybe they didn't choose it. What right, after they'd agreed to have a bris, do you have to assume that they're still idol worshippers? Maybe there was a decision to become Jewish, but maybe that was genuine. And what was Shimon and Levi's answer? This was politics. They were doing it. They did it because Shechem told them to do it. That's all. There was nothing more than it. We can see that and we can take that decision. That was their dispute. So the Ramban has now explained the dispute of Yaakov and the sons. The sons say, we dealt with the people and we know it wasn't genuine. They're the same idol worshippers they always were. Yaakov says, you can't assume that. And there's no way of resolving that difference of opinion. They have different views and it remained a difference of opinion all the way through. But what I want to do is just understand the Rambam quickly. What does the Rambam hold about all that? Clearly what the Rambam holds is that the law of establishing courts of law is not just a law to establish a court of law. The reasoning behind establishing a court of law is to stop people stealing, to stop people committing crime. What happens if you could stop somebody doing something and you don't? What does the Torah have to say about that? And what does that mean, you're responsible? It says if you did it yourself. Isn't that right? If you could stop somebody and you didn't, it says if you did it yourself. If you could have stopped somebody killing somebody and you did not stop that person, then you participated in the murder. So if the people of Shechem could have set up a legal system that would have not allowed Shechem to do it, then what is their guilt?
Tacit.
Yes, their guilt is not just that they didn't established courts of law. The Ramban is right. for not doing something, you don't get death. You get death for doing something wrong. But for not establishing courts of law, what is your guilt? What you're being held responsible for is not, oh, terrible thing, you didn't build a court of law. No. Because you didn't build a court of law, you are partners in that action. You become what's the word? An accessory to the crime of theft. And what we're killing you for is participating in the theft, not establishing courts of law. And the Rambam says that with one word when he says that the mitzvah over here is they have to make judges and in every town and put up courts of law. Lehazhires ha'am, to warn the people. What does that mean? The main purpose of a court of law is preventative. That's the main purpose. The reason you punish is to stop people doing it in the future. As long as there's a court of law that is effectively punishing, society can say, we're not part of the crime. We don't condone it. We warn people against it. We teach against it. And we punish. Therefore, we're not part of the crime. But if there's no court of law, you are part of the crime. It's not just, and your punishment, your responsibility is not that you didn't have a court of law. Your responsibility is you stole. You murdered. Whatever it is. You were part of that action. That's how the Rambam sees it. So the Rambam says their action was one of theft. The reason that the people of Shechem are part of that is because they didn't judge. By not judging, they're complicit. Is that right? They're accessories to that act. They're part of that act, and they're held responsible for the act. That's how the Rambam would deal with the Ramban's objection. Two different views as to what was wrong, two different views as to the obligations of the non-Jewish world, and as to how they're treated.
Couple questions. One is, I just want to make sure I got this right. You said a Jew has to get involved if it's safe.
Uh-huh.
But then you said the rabbi who told his people, yes, you can invite people on Shabbat, but don't quote me. Isn't that safe for him politically to say that? But he's saying it. So was it okay for him to say don't quote me to protect? Because if it's not safe in the community and he'll lose his job.
Now that's only a question of judging. To judge between people, you're allowed. If it's unsafe, you can pull out to judge. But to teach, to make statements, to withhold the truth because you're afraid of people, they're not allowed. And you're right, the fact that he said it was very good. Most don't say it, but him saying it, one sees the fear and one understands why most people won't say it.
Part of Yosef's anger also has been that his son had a bit of blunder and that he didn't have that bit of embarrassment or difficulty,
yes, could be,
in carrying out something.
But they did it with too much zest. And not with enough. That could be, although that's not what the Rambam learned it, but that could be a possibility. Liz and then Linda.
You might have covered this already, but so is there another level to this about the production of Dina being related to the lack of Din in their society, that they think something about Dina and Din, that could you substitute the idea of the legal system and the law in place of Dina in the whole thing and get another level of understanding?
Just by playing on the word Dina.
Dina and Din. And I just noticed, because as you read it, there was a lack of Dina. At first I thought you said Dina, the woman, and I said, no, it means Dina, Din. But
no, I think that's probably taking it too far. It's a nice Friday night sermon, but I think it's not.
No,
it's not a good idea.
How does the Ramban answer the question you raised earlier? Why Shimon Timon? Why Shimon Levi will not punish for murdering all of them?
Because according to the Ramban, they're guilty of all the seven Noahide laws. So they're guilty of death. They didn't kill innocent people. The only question is what brought it about? What triggered it off? What triggered it off was the act of Dina, but what they're being killed for is for being degenerate people in every area of life. That's how the Ramban deals with it. And the Ramban's demolishment of the Ramban is very, very sophisticated and very neat. But the depth of the Rambam's understanding of the dynamic and what he reveals with that, what he uncovers in terms of principles, is just amazingly brilliant. And that's the greatness of the Rambam.